Mutual versus Statewide Insurance, Mr. Postal.
May it please the court. Obviously, the question presented here is whether the statewide additional insured endorsement furnishes illusory coverage. And in deciding that question, of course, the
I was curious, what is the remedy if you have illusory coverage? Do you get your $35 back? Is that what you're asking
for? No, that's not the remedy we're seeking. I think the remedy is...
Well, I don't get it. Well, why would you be entitled to more?
Well, Your Honor, because the offending clause...
I mean, you say you paid $35 and got nothing. Well, okay.
Actually, we didn't pay it. The named insured paid it.
All right. Someone paid $35 and didn't get anything. So, why should that lead to the courts rewriting the insurance policy to give you more?
I'm not sure that rewriting the insurance policy is the way to put it.
Well, but it is the way to put it, because the insurance policy right now, rightly or wrongly, has very significant restrictions, and you, as another insurance company who wish that there was more around to share the burden with, would like to have seen it as a broader insurance policy. But there are a lot of steps, and as Judge Posner says, maybe if the client got the wrong insurance policy, maybe just that $35 is at stake.
Well, again, the $35 is actually paid by Statewide's named insured, and the $35 would go to Statewide, so I don't see how that helps Liberty Mutual's subrogees to enjoy the coverage that they bargained for. They bargained for standard CGL additional insured coverage. I provided the court with a lot of materials about what standard additional insured coverage covers, and it covers the negligence of the additional insured so long as there's any connection.
Well, it often does, but of course, the Illinois court, your brief is kind of a funny brief to read because it mostly is a plea for Illinois law to be different, and lots of reliance on dissenting opinions and lots of criticism of Illinois appellate court decisions. And I frankly think you may be talking to the wrong court. You know, it's our obligation, even if Illinois is willing to live with a very thin scope for these policies, to follow Illinois law.
Well, Your Honor, I think if this court has any persuasive data or any basis to find that the Illinois Supreme Court would rule in a way that's different than the two Illinois appellate court cases, then this court is perfectly within its rights to make that prediction.
Well, right, but the word you used, which is the correct one, is persuasive, and when you don't really see any evidence coming out of Illinois that is unhappy with this, and when the Illinois courts themselves say, you know, maybe it's a very small set of cases that would fall within the strict liability box, maybe structural alterations, or maybe some tile has asbestos in it, or, you know, who knows? There are weird cases, and tort lawyers are more than happy to throw in strict liability claims, sometimes when perhaps even they shouldn't. But it's not logically impossible, even in the line of business that this company appears to have had, for there to be something happening that might lead to a strict liability claim.
Your Honor, I don't think logical impossibility is the standard for illusory coverage determinations. I think the standard is if the policy doesn't cover any reasonably expected set of circumstances, and that's a quote from...
Well, but surely the premium is relevant, because for $35 you might say to yourself, look, I don't really know what I'm getting here, because I can't really imagine a situation which this would be triggered. On the other hand, who knows what courts are going to do, you know, creating new liability, something. So for $35, I will buy a little bit of peace of mind. So are you going to outlaw that kind of insurance contract?
I think it's the fallacy to suggest that the coverage provided...
But you are going to outlaw that kind of insurance policy, right? For $35, you don't get much coverage, obviously.
But, Judge, the cost of the insurance is reflected in the premium that the named insured pays for the policy, not in the $35 that is paid as an administrative cost to issue the additional insured endorsement. the named insured, which is Bond Enterprises, has, as the court is undoubtedly aware, when an insurance policy is written and the premium is calculated, it's based largely on the nature of the business and the loss history of the insured. That loss history includes claims against additional insureds, and so the premium that they paid for the policy includes the cost of carrying additional insureds on the policy. $35 is not that cost. The cost is a lot more. And it's paid both by Bond Enterprises when they buy the policy and by Principal in Arlington when they pay Bond Enterprises.
I understand what you say when you say cost. What's the $35 for?
It's an administrative cost.
But it gets you additional insurance.
Without
if you don't pay the $35, you don't get this additional coverage, do you?
Well, this is a blanket additional insured endorsement, so it's not...
Just answer that question first. If they had decided they didn't want to part with another $35, and so they said, no, we're not going to do that, would they have had...
Who's they? Bond Enterprises?
Bond, yeah.
Okay.
Would Bond have been able to purchase from Statewide this policy with the endorsement for the limited additional insured coverage?
If they didn't want to pay $35 for
they
it?
They said, well, you're telling me it's going to cost $35. We're operating on a shoestring here. so we're not going to pay. And so the insurance company says, fine, so we'll sell you a policy that doesn't have additional insured coverage in it. Isn't that what would have happened?
I suppose so. They would have been in breach of their contract.
That's true.
To provide the insurance, but... the point is, their loss history includes claims against additional insureds that their carrier paid, defended, and indemnified. So that's factored into the premium that they paid for their policy. Even if the, so I guess the court's judge, you're right, that if they, on this particular policy, elected not to attach an additional insured endorsement, I have to assume the premium would be the same.
And save the $35.
Right. But despite that, the fact is that because the basic premium for the policy is calculated based on previous loss history, which includes claims against additional insured, it's not accurate to say that the coverage was only...
But do we know what kind of claims? Because if their previous loss history was based on this kind of additional insured provision, you can assume that there would have been very, very few claims because of the imputed, you know, because of all the things that you object to about it. If the previous loss history had been based on what you described as sort of the industry standard clause, which was not used in this policy, then perhaps there would have been more claims and maybe we would know more about how safe they are, et cetera. But I don't know how to understand the facts in the way that you're asking us to, since there's a lot of bundling of price of one thing and another and a lot of uncertainty about the previous policy.
Well, what I'm asking the court to do is this. Instead of taking the approach that the district court took and that the Illinois Appellate Court has taken, which is to look at the universe of all claims against all insureds and to conclude that the coverage isn't illusory because some of those insureds may actually be engaging in ultra-hazardous activity that would subject their customers to strict liability claims, therefore the coverage isn't illusory. I think that the proper approach is to look at this insured risk.
Why do you think there's a rule about illusory coverage anyway?
Because it's against Illinois public policy.
Oh, please. Why? That's not an answer. Why should there be such a rule?
Well,
we usually allow people to buy anything they want, even if it's worthless. So why do we have this principle?
And why should you be able to benefit from it?
Well, we are asserting the rights of principal in Arlington because we are subrogated to those rights. They should be able to enjoy coverage.
Well, I guess what Judge Evans' question points so is these are companies, these aren't individuals. I mean, presumably the rule about illusory coverage is designed to protect individuals from, in effect, being defrauded. They think they're getting something, and they're not.
Well,
that's not true here, though. I mean, the policy is clear. These are companies. They can hire a lawyer to ask them whether they have any legal risk here, and it's a tiny amount of money. So why would you...
There's nothing in the illusory coverage case law that suggests that...
No, but think, that's why I asked you what you think the purpose of it is. You know, laws usually have a purpose.
Right,
and
I understand.
The purpose helps to determine their the scope of their application.
I don't think that the purpose...
So why do you think, we have this principle about illusory coverage?
Because insurance companies should not be allowed to write endorsements that create only the appearance of coverage.
Why not? Deception?
Absolutely.
All right, but this is a very weak fraud case you have here.
Well, I'm not.
No, you say it's fraud, deception, fraud. Call it what you want. Where's the deception when the limitations are clear? The insured are companies rather than hapless individuals, and the price is very low, so that it's obvious to the purchaser. Not obvious for $35. I'm not going to get a lot of additional coverage. Where's the injustice? You know, the
reasonable expectations of an additional insured are that they're going to be covered for their own negligence, that they're not, their coverage isn't going to be limited to non-existent risks. The only risk that Statewide claims that their policy covers, that their additional insured endorsement covers, is the risk of being held strictly liable for their named insured's operations. Those operations couldn't possibly give rise to strict liability.
Oh, unlikely to.
Well, it's not unlikely.
Well, it is construction, isn't it, we're talking about?
This is construction, and there are no reported cases of, other than the very narrow categories of ultra-hazardous activity, there are no reported cases of a general contractor or an owner being held strictly liable for ordinary construction activity.
Yes, but an owner can be held strictly liable if... if there's a dangerous situation in the property.
Not strictly liable, no. The owner can only be held liable for negligence in any control that it retained over the work. That's very different than strict liability. This policy, by Statewide's own admission, covers nothing but strict liability. There can't be a strict liability claim against in a case where the insured is not engaged in ultra-hazardous activity.
What are we to make of the fact that the Illinois Insurance Commission doesn't have any problem with this endorsement?
Well, two things. First of all, I don't think it's relevant what they think, because I think this court has to make its own determination. But secondly, I find it very strange to infer consent from the Illinois Department of Insurance when they went to the trouble of filing an amicus brief in the Illinois Supreme Court in 1994, in which they argued that indeed this very endorsement does furnish illusory coverage. Now, why did the Director of Insurance not reject the endorsement in this case? I don't know. It's a matter of speculation.
Suppose I owned a pit full of sulfuric acid, and I hired a contractor to drain it, and one of his workers was injured. Couldn't I be sued for having an unsafe having a hazard on the property? I think I could be.
Yeah, you're talking about a strict liability claim.
Yeah.
Well, nothing of that kind is contained in the application or other material.
Yeah, but we don't know what all the different projects that the insureds might find themselves involved in. Who knows? He hired to build a fence for a tiger. We know that owners of tigers or owners of wild animals are strictly liable unless they're zoos for damages caused by the tiger. So why wouldn't that be a possible case?
If Bond Enterprises were hired to build a fence for tigers?
Right. My tiger in my backyard.
Well, they would have to disclose that type of business activity when they apply for
right.
the insurance. They didn't do that.
Well, Bond says we build fences. I mean, I think that's where Judge Posner is going with this. I mean, what Bond is doing is, as you might say, ordinary construction, but there can be context to the project as a whole that might indeed give rise to a strict liability claim.
Well, if the court is suggesting that there's that the possibility cannot be eliminated of the of ultra-hazardous activity taking place on an occasional basis, I concede that. But I think the standard is not logical.
So can a person buy insurance against very unlikely hazards?
Well, the standard is the, one of this court's cases. The name escapes me now.
Why do you want someone? Why do you want to forbid someone to buy very cheaply insurance against a very unlikely hazard?
Judge, I think the standard is reasonably expected set of circumstances. Like if the coverage won't apply to any reasonably expected set of circumstances, it's illusory. And that's the language of the Seventh Circuit's opinion.
And okay, thank you, Mr. Foster.
Thank you.
Mr. Lewin?
May it please the court, my name is Dave Lewin. I represent Statewide Insurance Company. There are three reasons why this court should affirm the decision of Judge Koukouras. The first is that three Illinois appellate court decisions have already ruled.
Well, what about, okay, so Mr. Postle's point is this is completely illusory because it's extremely difficult to think of plausible examples liability on part of the insurance company would be triggered. So can you think of any plausible case where Bond might have a use for this insurance?
I think if they were doing demolition work, that could very well fall under there. But I think the question...
But didn't they say they don't do demolition work?
They also, if you look at the application, they said they don't put up structures either.
So the application is filled with lies, or what?
The application, I think what Mr. Anderson, who was the general counsel, said was we have a general idea that they're in the construction business. That's pretty much what we know. We've got this data in front of us. We've got the application. We know a little bit about what they do.
They were doing in this project, they were doing structural work, putting up the...
Putting up structural steel, I believe.
Steel, right.
I believe...
Is it possible to imagine a strict liability claim in that situation?
Strictly putting up structural steel, I personally can't think of one. Just strictly putting it up, which could lead to that. But I think there's a case called Pekin versus American Country, which says if they were doing roofing work and the policy excluded roofing, that coverage is still not illusory. In Pekin versus American Country, what the company sold was
and
a policy
the,
that excluded roofing.
And what's the theory in your roofing case? Why it's not illusory?
Because it's the obligation of the insured to look and determine what coverage you need. That's been the law in Illinois for quite some time, and I want to bring the court's attention to a case that came down just 2 weeks ago, which I don't think is, I'm just citing to show that the trend continues in Illinois, and that's the Sonia Moore versus Johnson County Farm Bureau that was ruled on in the 5th District just 2 weeks ago. Again, they said the insurance company has no obligation to decide what kind of insurance coverage is best for the insured. When you have a case where there's no reasonable time to ever find coverage, like in Glazewski, where you have a $20,000 underinsured motorist provision, yes, that's illusory. But beyond that, you just don't have that obligation.
But that seems to be defining illusory as, in fact, logically impossible. I mean, in that underinsured motorist case, the way the numbers worked, there wasn't a set of circumstances that would ever arise.
I agree with that. I think, again, the problem with the plaintiff's case is they're trying to create a situation where you have what I want to call the occasionally illusory policy. If my client, or not my client, sorry, if Bond was a demolition contractor, this endorsement would be perfectly valid. There would be a huge slew of claims that this could apply to. You can't say, I don't think, under Illinois law of anywhere, where a policy is illusory in one situation and not illusory in another situation.
Why don't you say that? If Bond were, a company that came and cleaned the office once a week, and for some reason they had to have the CGL policy with the endorsement, why isn't it appropriate to look at what they're really doing and how it relates to the project that they bought the insurance for?
Because I think in that situation, what you'd have is the Bond's obligation to look at the coverage. It would also be the obligation of the building owner to say, you know, what are we having here? I think when counsel talked about the reasonable expectation of the parties, it mixes something up, which is Bond had one expectation and the other contractors had another expectation.
Do we have evidence here? I assume that this policy must have been at least available for Arlington and Principal to review.
We do that. In fact, we even go further than that, which is the certificate of insurance under Illinois law specifically put them on notice that they are required to look at this, to look at the policy.
Okay.
So again, I think what you're talking about in terms of the expectations is Bond is obligated by the contract to purchase an endorsement. Bond, obviously, they're in the business. It's not covering them, it's covering the other people. They want to buy the cheapest endorsement possible. I think, logically, Arlington and Principal might have the most broad coverage possible. So we're talking about the expectations. Well, Bond's got one expectation, Arlington's got another expectation. You've got a contract, a construction contract, that says Arlington and Principal have the right to review the coverage after it's been submitted. The certificate of insurance put them on notice, and there's a provision at the top which says, this is for information purposes only. Look at the policy. Arlington Principal got that policy, at least got the certificate. They never looked at the policy, or if they did, they approved it. And now Liberty Mutual, who wasn't even a party to that contract, is coming in and saying, well, this isn't what they expected. I think we need to look at what they did, what Bond, Arlington, and Principal did, which was they all agreed on this contract, they all went forward on this contract. Arlington and Principal allowed Bond to start working. And it's only later when there was a contract that Liberty Mutual, someone who's not even a party to this, comes in and says, well, I don't think this is what they really meant here. This isn't really what they wanted. So again, I think what you have here is an endorsement which will provide coverage in certain circumstances. It won't provide coverage here. I don't think anyone's disputing that, that there is no duty to defend or indemnify under this policy. But saying that is different from saying that the coverage is illusory. Again, the Pekin case I talked about, if they had done roofing work and they sold them a policy that excludes roofing, Illinois appellate courts have said that's fine. That's unfortunate for the insured, but the insured got the obligation to look over their policy. The three cases clearly on point, Kramer, Klein,
okay,
and
Nathan. You don't have to go into the
okay.
Case.
Okay. Based on those points, I'd ask you to affirm the district court's decision. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Lund. Thank you to Mr. Pope as well. Time expired. Next case.